New York and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. Today's topic, we're going to be talking to a rosarian, an award-winning rosarian, might I add, and we're going to be talking about how to grow organic roses that can win some awards. It's interesting. People are so fond of different areas in their gardens, and when it comes to roses, roses are always the centerpiece of every well-manicured garden. They can be a challenge at times, but the rewards, of course, are great. Due to concerns about the harsh chemicals that are used typically to help cultivate these very high-maintenance plants, more and more gardeners are seeking advice from rosarians to help them grow beautiful roses organically. So today, I have a wonderful woman named Susan Fox. She's the founder of Gaga's Garden. She's an author. She has won so many awards, and she has the trophies and the pictures to prove it. She is just really something else. And if you're somebody that isn't really too crazy about roses, you might find that after listening to Susan, you might just fall in love with them. So I would like to welcome to the show Susan Fox. Good afternoon, Susan.
Good afternoon, June, and thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be with you and to talk with roses. And as I mentioned before, you're so easy to talk to, and we could talk all day about roses. And again, it's just an exciting time to plan our spring garden. So, and I know today you want to talk about some of the organic elements and soil amendments that we use for planning our organic rose garden. So where should we begin?
Well, actually, Susan, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself? I mean, you have such an incredible background, and you've been doing a lot of public speaking for many, many years. How does one exactly become an official rosarian?
Well, how I began with roses is, like a lot of young people, my mother was just an avid gardener, and she loved to be outside in the garden, and she wanted me to assist, and she wanted me to help weed, and she wanted me to learn to do things, and I didn't want to do it. I didn't want any part of it. And it was a gradual process, and I moved away and started wanting to plant things, and I think I started putting in petunias and snapdragons, and just started learning to love putting in different types of plants. And when later, as I when I grew, when I bought my first home, it was my mother's home, and she had a rose garden. So, in other words, I moved back to my mother's home, and I didn't know how to take care of the rose garden. And so, with the assistance of my mother, I wanted to take care of this proper garden. And I sought the help of a local rose garden. It was in northern Illinois on the North Shore. And there was a rose garden in Libertyville, Illinois. And it was taken care of by the Libertyville Men's Garden Club. And there was a gentleman, a self-described octogenarian rosarian. And he was just an amazing man, and his name was Lynn Arthur, and really, you would have to listen very carefully, because he spoke haltingly, and he walked in a slow shuffled step, and he took me under his wing, and he taught me everything you would want to know about growing and taking care of roses, and then he encouraged me to show roses, and it was really amazing. And I did then enter and begin showing in along the North Shore with the Northeastern Illinois Rose Growers. And subsequently, it was in that local Rose Society that I did win, which I think you posted that picture It was in the Chicago Sunday American Rose Society, their national convention for one of the trophies.
What was that like? People don't seem to understand what it's like to enter a competition, especially in the horticultural societies and other similar communities. There is some intense pressure.
Showing roses is, for anyone who's shown in any competition at any level, the stress is it's very high.
Well, you're dealing with a lot of egos.
Well, I know people have asked me, you know, how do you show a rose? You dig up the plant, or this particular rose, it was very interesting how the selection came to be entered in that rose show. The selection was a large flowered climber named Tempo, and I acquired the rose bush because my son at the time went to work for a car dealership, and you might have noticed the name of the rose is called Tempo. At the time, I think it was Pontiac that had come out with a car named Tempo, and my son called me and said, "Mom, if you'll come drive a Tempo, they'll give you a rose bush." And I planted that rose bush, and this fits right in with the show, the organic nature of the show, June, because that rose was fertilized with eggshells and coffee grounds. That's the only thing I ever put on that plant. And it grew to be the most spectacular rose bush, and I entered it in that show, and my son actually, who's very artistic, selected the stem, if you will, that I entered. And, you know, you polish the leaves. You can put nothing on a specimen that you enter. There can be nothing artificial. You polish the leaves with your fingertips. You can bring it up to a high polish. You just warm it with your fingertips. It's really quite a process. And then it just has to be perfect in the way it's presented for...
Like, how do you prep the rose? I mean, other than rubbing the petals, what else do you do? I'm almost tempted to make a joke and say, do you give it a manicure and a pedicure too? But, you know.
You do. I mean, the president of the Rose Society, that society at the time, he was also president of the American Rose Society, but I believe that he could force a rose to open to perfection. But I had seen people that could put a Q-tip into the bloom and then take a hairdryer. You could do that and warm it to open to perfection. But I was never that good, trust me, June. I credited nature with the way that rose looked, but you want proportion, you know, with the way the stem, you know, it's just, there's so many factors. I'm certainly not an authority on showing. I leave that to nature. I just had a perfect specimen that I entered, so.
You just happen to be very good at winning the awards.
Well, there's a lot better than I am. I just enjoy going to the garden close to showtime, finding some great... My intent for the first shows were I have beautiful roses, and at a local show, you want to share them. And I really took them for that reason, to share and to encourage people to come to the shows and to share the beauty of roses and hope that they, too, would enjoy getting into growing roses and bringing them into the landscape. But my mother, truly, you asked what got me into growing roses, and I would say that it was my mother and then the local garden clubs and the local rose societies. I had so many people encourage me. I would have to thank lots of people.
Well, you know, I have to thank those very same people because, let me tell you, the things that you've done are just tremendous. And, you know, folks, it's interesting. There are so many people that I've interviewed on this show and so many people that I've met at the different botanical gardens that are just really wonderful with what they do. And like Susan, very modest. It's interesting. You think that you know everything, and then you meet somebody who makes you feel like you know nothing. That's basically the joy of gardening. I mean, there's just so much to learn, and it's impossible to learn everything in one lifetime. It doesn't matter what your focus is. There's just so much to learn, and it's impossible to just master everything. With Rosarians, it's an especially interesting area because the love and attention that these folks put into all the care, roses are just so finicky. I kind of have a very hands-off approach. I look at it this way. They're out there. I have just a few roses. I don't have a big rose garden. And that's also because my allergies, unfortunately. But I do admire people that, such as yourself, Susan, who have just tremendous collections. When you're first starting out, I'm asked this many times by people that are looking to create a specifically designated area in their garden to create some particular spot that's designated for roses. What type of soil should you really have in order to begin thinking about having a rose garden? What's ideal?
I wanted to say one thing, though. I know a lot of people do. Roses are perceived as finicky, and they can be, but they are tough, and they are forgiving. So I just wanted to preface.
Mine hold grudges.
They can. And they can really, they can inflict some wounds too, but roses like a certain type of soil, and I think you know that I did grow up in northern Illinois, and growing roses in northern Illinois, and then remember for a corporate relocation, I moved to Texas, and that was like growing roses in a whole other, I may as well have been in another world. I mean, I was, because I had no idea what to do. I had to start all over learning how to grow roses. And I did, and had 200 roses there. But roses in Texas had to believe that they didn't even know they were in Texas gumbo, which is clay. So basically, roses like a combination of they really like an elevated bed. They don't like to have what my mother used to say, they don't like to have their feet wet, meaning they like a well-drained bed. So ideally, you would like to have them in an elevated bed, which I did put in. So I moved to Texas, and my rose garden in nice, rich black, you know, the black soil of northern Illinois, it was in a, you know, I didn't have an elevated bed. So I moved to Texas. I'm going to put in this dream garden. I'm going to have elevated beds. I'm going to have drip systems, which I did. And they didn't know they were growing in Texas gumbo because I brought in, I tilled up the clay, the Texas gumbo, and to that subsoil, I added well-rotted compost, you know, like rotted humus. I brought in Canadian sphagnum peat moss, ground bark, and like a seasoned rotted cow manure, sand, and a garden gypsum, and like a bone meal. And you put that in at a rate of about 6 to 8 pounds per 100 square feet of bed. So they didn't even know. No matter where you grow roses, that's a pretty much perfect soil to put roses in.
Mm.
And you sounded pretty underwhelmed there, too. But
no, I was just thinking about all the things that I just don't do and have never done to my rose garden. I remember the first rose that I bought from the nursery, I remember asking the nursery owner, you know, which was the easiest to grow. And he said, oh, yeah, they're all great. You know, they're kind of finicky, but, you know. And then
you know what? That's like, I'm going to tell you what. I read one time, and I was in a food and wine magazine, it said, and I always love this, if you go into a restaurant and you ask the server what's great on the menu, and they say everything, it said, get up and leave. Well, if you go in and you're trying on a dress and the person says, oh, you look fabulous, that means they just don't care enough to commit. So here's what I think about someone who tells you that about a rose. They don't know what they're talking about, okay?
Well, now, I was naive back then. Now, before I buy something, I shouldn't say that because, you know, me in a nursery is just a bad idea because I just, you know, you see so many new gadgets, you see so many different things that you want to buy, and especially if they have sales and they have all sorts of things, and then you know you see somebody that you know, and now of course you can't let them think that you're not going to have a better looking garden than they have, you know, so of course you have to go overboard. And it's just kind of interesting, at this point, before I buy something, I will ask someone that works there, I'll say, well, what have you bought and why? And if I go to a restaurant, same thing, even though I don't really go to restaurants that much anymore. If I do, you know, it's always, why this particular plant? What makes it great? And what do other people buy? And have there been any problems with them? I mean, anybody who's fairly competent when it comes to plant care, I mean, they don't need to be a Rosarian necessarily, but they'll tell you what other people are doing. They'll tell you, they'll find somebody that has more information if they don't know it directly, you know. So I found that asking a lot of questions really does help. But at this point, before I go through the trouble, it's just that for me at this point, if I'm going to plant something, I really need to think about it. I need to think about the care that it requires, because my schedule is very, it's very demanding. And there are certain plants that I just don't have the time for. And I know that it would be a disservice to that plant for me to buy it and then neglect it. So I just don't have the heart to do it at this point. And when it comes to anything that's going to require initially a great deal of care, if I know that I can't commit to it, I just won't do it. And so that's something that I just keep in mind. I mean, certain plants that I pick up from the nurseries, yeah, if it's something that I really want to make the effort towards, you know, if it's a fruit tree or something like that, I'll do it. But it depends upon what it is. Roses, because of my allergies, that's primarily one of the main reasons why I don't have such an elaborate rose garden, even though it would be nice. But, you know, unfortunately, it is what it is for me, you know?
But, you know, June, the greatest roses, I mean, I do think that everybody now can have easy care roses. Knockout roses are just wonderful, you know, in Texas especially, and I see them here in landscapers now and are putting them as a centerpiece for landscape. You know, I had Red Raz. It's a, you know, a deep purple double-type blooming centerpiece of landscape design, and they are disease resistant. They bloom just like crazy. They are black spot resistant. You can prune them just like a shrub. I mean, if you want roses and you want lots of bloom, for Pete's sake, they look like an azalea. They bloom so much. I mean, It just depends on what you want. You just can. Now these double knockouts, they come in yellow. They come in, I had rainbow. I think it's just called rainbow. I started to say rainbow sorbet, but I have so many roses, I can't believe it. Unless I'm looking at, I think, Excel spreadsheet. I had an Excel spreadsheet with all my roses listed on it. And
I'm sure that when you go out there, you can name each and every single one, including their botanical name.
No, not the botanical name. I only know the variety name. And I mean, I know whether they're, I tend to like, I do floribundas and hybrid teas and the large flowering climbers and miniatures. I don't have a lot of old garden roses. I do like them. It's just, you know, you have to stop somewhere, and when you're at a couple hundred roses, you know, you just, how many can you put in? I like David Austin roses. And it's just what you really nailed it. It's what you plan. What do you hope to achieve? You know, what do you want your garden to be, and how much time do you have? And there are certain roses that take more care. And
now,
there are roses coming out that are more disease resistant and don't take as much care.
Now let's just take a minute to talk about the types of roses and You know, we'll just name a few of them. There's so many to talk about, but let's just talk about some of the ones that you've just mentioned and why you selected them. And as you said, not everyone is going to have the same taste or is going to have the same opportunities in their yard or wherever they're planting them, because depending upon the light, depending upon the way everything is set up, they may not have the hardscape to accommodate, especially if it's a runner, or a climbing rose, rather. Now, for example, you mentioned the David Austin English roses, and these are very, very popular. Why? What attracts you to this particular type of rose?
Well, they're absolutely gorgeous and have that old world look to them. And I had just Graham Thomas. I had a couple just magnificent of the David Austin roses. So because they have that, again, that old garden rose, and they combine all of that elegance with the properties of some of the new roses. So that's why I love them, and I think that's why so many people do. I lost my Graham Thomas in Texas because I think there were 100 days of 100 degrees, and there were a couple of dead spots for water. I mean, it was just almost impossible because, again, if you're going to try to conserve and try to, you know, there were water restrictions, you've got to take that into consideration, you know, if you're going to try to be very careful. And I lost that rose during that really high temperatures. So those are things you have to, if you're trying to put in plants, but roses don't take as much water as a lot of people. I've had roses survive very difficult drought times and very little amount of water. They just, the blooms cut way back. They go into a preservation mode, if you will. You know, you can cut back on the water, but they can't have no water, you know, so.
Of course. Now, do you put any type of a canopy over the roses at this point, now that you've had that experience? Do you ever do that? Because I know some gardeners that do that, where they'll put up a canopy if it just gets way too hot, just to protect their plants from being scorched.
Right. A rose needs 6 to 8 hours of full sun, but, you know, that's a good point. I noticed that roses in full sun in a really hot climate, you know, they do better with some protection. So, yes, that's a really good idea if it's going to be extremely hot to protect them, because then they do better when they're not just being scorched, you know, in full sun. So, and it preserves some of the moisture. So that's a great idea. But
now, Susan, another type of roses, the All-American Rose Selections, this is a particular type of rose that basically has been observed, if you will, by people that have in mind the typical gardener, if you will, that is not necessarily going to have your expertise, but, you know, might encounter all sorts of different issues. What has your experience been with All-American Selections?
You know, I think you've probably seen, you know, anyone who's read the things that I write, when I go to buy roses, I take this little handbook. It's called it's actually put out by the American Rose Society. It's the a handbook for selecting roses, and it uses a guide, and it also includes that ARS. It has an ARS when they've the rating, and that takes into consideration people's rating on the roses. It's disease resistance, and they include in their magazine the different ratings for, you know, how people rate them, what they think of them, or because they have gardens, you know, people agree to rate roses based on all sorts of things. disease resistance, what they think of the rose color, that sort of thing. So I found it to be, pretty accurate, but some selections. I mean, I bought one rose that I think it was an ARS winner. I've got my little book here. I can look up.
The ARS winners are really something. I mean, you can Google the All-American Rose Selection winners. I mean, it's a whole bunch of them, but it's a really interesting process. I've participated in the critique of the selection, not with roses, but with other plants, and it's mm-hmm. quite interesting because you're observing these plants in all sorts of different conditions and, you know, different times of day and whatnot. And just, it's a group effort, and then they collect the data from all over the place. And just kind of interesting how they go about just figuring out what's really hardy and what's not.
I was just in this book, in the 2011, I couldn't locate my 2012, which, believe me, I'll be tearing up this place looking for that book. I'm not kidding. I carry that thing. But my 2011, even this book, it indicates with an at sign, this rose, whether the rose is an All-American Rose Selection winner. So, you know, you can go through and determine whether it was a winner of the All-American Rose Selection or not. And it also will show whether it's an American Rose Center Trial Grounds winner or whether it's an AARS Society Award winner. So, I mean, there's a lot of factors. And I wanted to tell you, before I choose a rose, I look at all these factors. But with that said, I also, emotion comes into play when I choose a rose, because I can know all these things, June, and then I will see a rose that, oh, my goodness, that was my mother's favorite. She just loves fragrant cloud. I'm going to get it anyway. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because
I'm guilty of that, too. So, yeah. I don't know anybody who's not guilty of that. I mean, that's one of the things that is great about gardeners. If you have a passion for gardening and working with the earth, it's just amazing when you see something that brings back a particular memory. All of a sudden, you just have to incorporate that into your own environment.
Right, or I can't imagine having a garden without a peace rose. Thank goodness it's rated like a 9 or something. Peace has been around since, there's just certain roses that I think so far I plan on having in every rose garden. And they're just, there's a rose called Heaven that's just spectacular. There's roses that make me think of people. I have a rose that's named Louise. Names that make me think of, like, Aunt Louise. You know, there's names you can put roses in that you...
Now, there's the Paul McCartney rose. There's the Paul McCartney rose. How did they get some of these roses with these celebrity names? Explain that.
I think you can buy that. I'm not sure. I should say, don't quote me. I'm just saying that over your fabulous radio show and wherever. And I think at one point, Jex, I thought you could, you could buy it, but I don't know. So
I think somebody should buy a rose and name it after me if they're they haven't done it already. That would be great, right?
Remember, isn't that you can buy a star, like, for...
Who wants a star? I want a rose. I want to be in everything.
Well, that's a great idea. I have a rose. It's a little miniature rose, Jack Walter of Kimbrew Walter Roses, but it's not filed properly. I'd have to go file it. It's named after my middle name, the miniature.
Yeah, the miniature roses, they're really just... they're nice for many different reasons because you can put them in containers. They make really great borders, and they also solve the space problem for people that
Absolutely.
Have a yard or a balcony. I mean, And they're very hardy in, I think it's zones 5 to 9, as long as you,
and,
you know, protect them during the winter.
And I may have told you this before, but, you know, I love fibrous begonias. And after going to, what's that wonderful island off of Vancouver, or Boucheron Gardens, is that how you say it, Boucheron Gardens?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love tuberous begonias because they're, you know, the great big double begonias and they have such intense colors. But so I love begonias. So all you begonia lovers, I just love begonias. But fibrous begonias, if you plant begonias as your border and you go out and you have a gorgeous English-style type garden, and in the summer you go out and you say, oh, you lovely begonias, you just look fabulous every day. They look pretty much the same, right? And they're gorgeous every day. But if you decide to plant miniature roses, every day is an exciting day because they change. Every day a rose changes. One day they're buds. The next day they change. They're a different shape. They're a different, and the colors change. And so I started replacing where I would plant the, you know, the fibrous begonias to planting all sorts of miniature roses. And then every day is an exciting day. You walk out and you stroll around and you see that what's a new bud and what's a full-blown rose, and they just change. So,
what are some of your favorite miniature roses, Susan?
Oh, my goodness. That's...
I know the list goes on, but if you could just name a few, what are some of your favorite ones?
You know, hold on, because they're, I want to tell you something. The miniature roses, they have the cutest little names, like teddy bear. If you want to just fall in love with picking out roses, then you, people could get so into buying little miniatures because listen to these names: Child's Play, Kristen, Golden Halo, Jim Dandy, Rainbow's End, Black Jade, Winsome, Little Jackie,
Cuddle. Bee's Knees.
Yeah, I mean, Puppy Love. I mean, they just have the cutest names. I had one that was just beautiful, and it's my daughter-in-law's sister's name, Kristen, Child's Play. I mean, there's cuter ones than that. Of course, that brought me to a name of one that everyone always commented, but it's not a miniature. It's a Floribunda, and that was Sexy Rexy. I took a picture of Sexy Rexy that's on the wall. It won a it won a prize at a photography show, at a rose show, Sexy Rexy. And that was named after... it was actually named after that movie, a movie star, Rex. Now I can't think of his name, but he was a big movie star.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now I can't think of his name, but...
Oh, sorry.
Paul Perrine. I'll have to email it in. But you can just have fun with the names of miniature roses.
Now, it's just interesting that there's so much to the miniature roses. I mean, you have ones that are fragrant, ones that are not. You have some that are single petal. Whereas you have others that have 5 to 8 petals. I mean, yeah, there's so much to know. I before I started really taking a closer look at the miniatures, I really didn't realize how complex they were, and it's just fascinating. And, you know, once again, anybody can grow them, especially if you're not, you know, you don't have this vast experience with roses. You can always grow them in a container, and what's nice about that is you can move them around.
Exactly. And I wrote Jack Walter, and, you know, he was named, I meant to mention, he was, this honor had only been bestowed to two people. It's a really high honor within the National Rose Society. It's like honor, it's again, I'll have to email you this title, but he was host to the miniature convention in Fort Worth, and I wrote the article for the American Rose Society magazine, and the reason I'm telling you this is because I sent in a picture that I took of one of the single petal roses, the little miniatures that I grew, and it's one of the most precious little roses. It's deep, deep orange with a yellow center, and it was just breathtaking for the national convention over at Fort Worth when the miniature rose, they had their own convention. Can you imagine the little miniature convention?
Oh, I can. I mean, you have societies for everything, for hostas, for dahlias. I mean, nothing surprises me. I mean, it just goes to show how many people out there have a particular area within horticulture that they just absolutely love, and it makes sense. I mean, it's a great way to connect with other people that share the same passion that you might, or if you're just looking to learn more about the different types of roses, you know, a great way to do that is to join either a local society or some type of a gardening club. I mean, just so much information, or become a master gardener. I mean, there's just so much information that is available, not to mention if you visit some of the botanical gardens, there's a spectacular rose garden at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden for those of you that are close to New York City, as well as the New York Botanical Garden, which is actually in the Bronx. But, I mean, there are gardens pretty much everywhere that you can think of. There's some sort of public garden that is available that does have, as a focal point of the garden, a rose garden.
Well, and I would encourage everyone. I had so much help from, as a novice gardener, from the local Rose Society, and I think you can go online and look up to see if there's a local Rose Society in your local community. And the local Rose Society in Libertyville at the time, it was pretty much, you know, I was fairly young, and it was dominated by, there was a corporation there. Most of the people were doctors and scientists, and they were so welcoming, and they wanted to teach me, and they shared their knowledge, and I am so grateful for the information that they shared. And they, I may have told you this, June, but then my little garden, my mother's garden, ended up being on the Northern Illinois garden tour, and I'll never forget, you know, the things that are told you in your life that, like, the best thing you ever heard. And one of the doctors said to me, you know, it was one of the leaders in the Northern Illinois Rose Grower Society said, "Susan, you have achieved perfect rose culture." I mean, can you imagine? Here I am now, and that was one of the greatest things ever said to me. Like, that.
Wow.
Just, I mean, it was just, the garden was just spectacular. And I just really, you just kind of live for those moments. But, you know, I feel like I would be a little remiss if I didn't share some of these. You know, we wanted to talk about some of the organics. I've worked to come up with this little recipe because I feel like our plants stay so much healthier if we put an organic mixture of fertilizer, and I do mix up. I go to a feed store, one of my favorite places, if it's not a hardware store or a great big home warehouse. Really, my favorite place is a feed store, I guess. I mix up. My husband bought a great big, not a wheelbarrow, but a thing we can mix this stuff in, and we go to a feed store, and I mix in the spring, like, 8 parts of alfalfa, like an alfalfa meal,
mm-hmm.
and 2 parts of cottonseed meal, and 1 part of feather meal, and I have put bat guano, but it's difficult to get So if you can't get that, I mix one part of kelp, kelp seaweed meal, and mix it all together. And, you know, for anyone, if you're listening to any of the advertisers, natural roses grow very fast. So the producers of chemical fertilizers, you know, that's a great sales pitch for chemical fertilizers because, you know, they're going to want you to put these fertilizers on every 7 to 14 days. But natural fertilizers, they are released very slowly. So organics, they release and they feed your plant and they release very slowly and they're very long-lasting. And they also minimize release of carbon dioxide from the soil. So I start building up the soil with like 2 cups of that rich organic fertilizer at the base of the plant every spring and then maybe 6 to 8 weeks after. I just keep building up the soil to make sure they have a rich feed source. So that's my organic soil mix that I...
Now, do you have that available on your website, Susan?
You know, I don't know if I put it on there, but I can send it to you, June. But also, in the spring, I've always, you know, I just always did it because I read you've got to put a dose of Epsom salt around the root of the plant, and that's because Epsom salt is a really rich in potassium. But that's what I was telling you, June, that as you dig deeper, you learn, and I learned from this Dr. Donald Trotter, I guess he's a PhD out in California, that he said instead of Epsom salt, that he's using this sulfate of potash magnesia, but I don't know where you get that because it doesn't have the salinity problem of Epsom salt, because you have to be careful not to use too much Epsom salt on your plant, because one time I overdid it with Epsom salts and you can get too much. But Epsom salt is a good tonic, especially if you're using city water, because, you know, those all of those chemicals and water minerals can build up around the root of your plant. So always start out in the spring with a dose of Epsom salt or sulfate of potash magnesia, if you know where to get it, because I don't.
Now, I'm right with you. Now, isn't it true that with the soil pH, roses tend to like it slightly acidic?
Yes, and you know, that's what I learned too. And I also know now why I've been doing so much better, you know, about not getting so much. Did you see that I said I put in that fossilized kelp or seaweed? And I was reading that seaweed helps to fight off black spot, the dreaded black spot. So that when you have that in your garden and you keep your beds not so wet and you pick off any leaves with black spot, that when you're using, I just read that today. Remember I told you keep learning things and when you're drilling down, I didn't realize it. I just saw that today. Amazing. Just when you think you might not, I don't think ever think I know it all, but I didn't know that. I didn't know that. But I also read that 2 tablespoons of vinegar mixed with a quart of water, sprayed early in the morning or in the evening, is supposed to help fight against black spot.
Now, what do you do? Actually, what are some tips for people that are tuning in right now and are concerned about black spot? How can you avoid it?
Well, first of all, you know, it's cool nights. It's any kind of, it's a fungus that's in the air all the time, but so damp, cool conditions. So you want to keep your bed, you don't want to water at night, you water early in the morning. You want your beds to be dry as much as possible. You just, you know, it's in the in the air, so you just try to avoid conditions that would cause black spot to
thrive. Yeah, I also found that
thrive.
if you water the roots, that's also very helpful.
Yeah, don't put it,
a lot of people
exactly.
just water the foliage.
No, that's why. Remember, that's why I had a drip system in Texas. You want to keep water off of, or you want it to dry. That's why you water early in the morning. And you don't want water on the plant overnight, if possible. But it would help to have this organic mixture of fertilizer, because I noticed, you know, I still battle. Everybody I know with roses does battle black spot if there's a lot of hot, warm, moist conditions, but I sure didn't have that much last year, and I think it might have been because of all the seaweed I had. And it can be kind of expensive, you know, but I buy this stuff. I buy these organic soil amendments in 50-pound bags, you know. But that's because I had 200 roses, so I think you can buy them in smaller. I had students, I started to say, I had people that I was helping to put in smaller gardens, and I would mix up small amounts for them and take them cups of my special brew to put on their plants, my special organic mixture.
Now, Belle, when do you stop fertilizing the roses?
You know, most of them say your last application, like September, because you want your plant to start producing rose hips, and you want also to stop. You want to stop cutting, except for maybe some of your bouquets you want to put on the table. And it signals your plant to go into dormancy. So your plant settles in for dormancy for the winter. It hardens it off. So you don't want to keep clipping off. It makes the rose hips, and it can overwinter and be stronger.
Thank you. Susan, we have a call. We have a few minutes left, but I'd like to see if we can take this call. Okay. Good afternoon. Do you have a question for Susan? Hello? Caller, area code 205. Do you have a question for Susan Fox? Okay. I guess they are still tuning in. Now, we've talked about the fertilization, the feeding of roses. Now, what about pests? What type of IPM do you recommend?
Early in the spring, and I noticed that one of the first pests that seem to emerge are aphids, and I purchased any type of garden center or ladybugs, and ladybugs can be, after watering, you can release ladybugs at night, and they pretty much, as far as I could see, June, they completely eliminated my aphid problem. They lay their eggs, and then the larva completely wiped out the aphid problem that I had, or just the normal aphids that you have in early spring. I was able to completely control most pests in the garden with a water wand, with a strong stream of water that you spray on the leaves and under the leaves, because so many of the pests can be just washed away and drown, especially in the hotter climates. Spider mites are a big issue, and they can just be washed off the plant. And I found that those high-intensity water wands,
yeah.
They just wash them off and drown them, and then your good bugs can come back into the garden and take care of the bugs that will attack the plant. And years ago, I have not seen this treatment again, but I read this, and I imagine it was in the American Rose magazine. The only other problem that I had, and it was a crown gall, and it's almost like a tumor that was on a plant, and I had always read that that was just a death sentence for one of your bushes, and this was a bush that I really cared about, and I read that this could be tried, and it said just remove this, carefully remove the growth, and then take just household bleach and apply it with a little baking brush to the site. And I did it, and I saved that bush. And I don't know, maybe it was worth it to me to try to just a local application with a pastry brush, and that bush lived and thrived. So, I had read this was just a dreaded thing that no one had ever been able to. But that's not a pest. That's some sort of a growth on a plant. So,
well, for me, I happen to be allergic to bleach, so that's not an option that I would pursue. But I know that there are there's so many things that you can do. And you know, once again, if it's a small area,
Wasn't even a teaspoon, you know what I mean? I just didn't want to have to lose the whole plant, you know, and I just put a dab on the end of the brush on a cane rather than completely. Otherwise your only option with this crown gall is to destroy the bush. You know, you'd have to dig it up, completely remove it. The bush would be, you'd have to destroy it. It's a growth that will kill the bush. So that's, I'm just saying, something I tried and was able to save the bush. So I've only had that happen one time to a bush. So I've never had anything like that.
Well, as I say, take care of small problems before they become big problems. And my feeling is that you should always learn to expect and tolerate little imperfections here or there. But you know, if you're trying to raise roses for award purposes, you know, it makes it a little challenging. I've always been a big fan of companion planting, alliums, nasturtiums, geraniums, rosemary, thyme. They're great plants for not only deterring bugs, but to attract beneficial insects. When it comes to the area that you're an expert in, which is the show roses, that's where it really does become a matter of trial and error, just trying to find something that works, trying to do something that is going to be the least harmful for the roses and as well as for the environment, for all the other living beings that are sharing that environment. And that's basically what it all boils down to. Now, Susan, we're almost out of time. Do you have any recommendations that you could quickly mention for a new gardener that is looking to dive in but not dive in too deep into the world of roses?
Well, you know, June, we moved to 3 acres and I'm started, I'm putting in new gardens, and I'm planning on doing more of, I'm starting with that do-it-yourself with some floribundas and a step-by-step, try it an easy way, and writing about it at Gaga's Garden, and I hope to make and share as much information as I can and make it easy and not intimidating. And I mentioned people that I help plan some gardens, small gardens, for people who really wanted to just have a garden for enjoyment. And I really take it very seriously, and I've committed to help people to put in their own rose gardens and make it easy for them and not be complicated. So if they have any questions, they can email them or and it's really not as hard. It's just, it doesn't have to be hard. You can put in easy care roses and sit back and drink your iced tea or sip your glass of wine or mint julep and make it easy and simple and fun.
Thank you. And Susan, what is your website?
It's www.gagasgarden.com, G-A-G-A-S-garden.com.
And folks, just want to repeat that one more time. It's www.gagasgarden.com. Actually, Susan's nickname is Gaga. She is clearly Gaga over her roses, and she's got the awards to prove it. I mean, you know, folks, if you are active with social media, please follow her on Facebook and also on Twitter under the same handle, which is Gaga's Garden. Susan, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been wonderful having you, and it's always great to talk to you, especially about anything to do with horticulture. But in this case, your award-winning roses, it's just, they're magnificent, and I can't wait to see what you do this year. And I know many people that follow your work also are very eager to see what you're going to be doing this year. So thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure, June.
Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.